Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Dave Player back with you live from the Allstate Showcase Studios on 720 WGN. So broadcaster historian Chuck Shaden, who was producer and host of the long-running Those Were the Days radio program from 70 to 2009, is joining us this evening. He has been nationally recognized for his efforts and was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 1993. A former newspaper editor and marketing executive, he turned his hobby into a vocation and drew from a collection of more than 50,000 vintage radio programs to prepare his broadcast. He was a founding editor and publisher of Nostalgia Digest magazine. He's the author of Speaking of Radio, Chuck Shaden's Conversations with the Stars of the Golden Age of Radio. He has interviewed hundreds of performers, writers, producers, and directors, all associated with the golden days of radio. And Chuck's interviews can be heard on his website, speakingofradio.com. And just this month debuted his new podcast, Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane. And he joins us tonight. Good evening to you, Chuck.
Well, we're a little late, folks, so good night.
Thank you for writing your own introduction, Chuck. That was fantastic. Always a pleasure. Always
Thank you,
a
Dave.
Pleasure.
I'm happy to be here with you.
Well, when I saw in Rob Feeder's column that you were coming back and doing a podcast, this is what I said. This guy's been doing this for almost five decades. To sit at home and be retired is one thing. To get some of that energy out and talk about the things you love, a podcast is perfect for you.
Well, I thought so. And I thought, well, maybe it gives me everything that I ever wanted in all of my broadcast career.
Yeah. Right?
Because I loved producing the programs. I loved creating the shows, building them, deciding what was going to go on the air. And then I enjoyed doing the shows. So I thought, well, gee, if I were to do a podcast, and I had to look up someplace on the internet what podcast meant. You know, what is a podcast?
Love that.
You know, I thought it was a broadcast coming out of a bean or something.
Right,
like that.
Yeah.
But no, a podcast is just a broadcast that's going on over the internet in some way, shape, or form.
Well, you know, I think about this too. I'm on in the middle of the night, and there's people that might want to listen to my content. They're not listening to it live. They're listening to the podcast afterwards.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it goes,
yeah.
and that's very nice. So I thought, well, let's see what it would take to do something like this. So I got together with my webmaster from the speakingofradio.com, Todd Nabel, right?
Yeah.
And said, what would it take to do a podcast? And he said, well, let me look into it. Let me figure it out. And with 24 hours later, we had a whole idea in mind for how to do it and what to put together with it. And so I'm a veteran now. I got one podcast under my belt.
Fantastic.
We do a new podcast every month, or we've done one for July.
Yeah.
And we'll do another one for August and September and so forth. And again, it's available 24/7, so you can listen to it. And it doesn't specify tonight is this happening or tomorrow that's happening.
You can listen to it in your car on the way home. You can listen to it while you wake up in the morning. You can do it on the weekends. It's really any place. And I guess no one knows more about the golden days of radio yesteryear other than you. You know, from the early 30s to the 50s and beyond. You can go to the movies. There was no television at home. Only radio was out there to entertain millions of people. That's really how we were entertained.
Indeed, indeed. And what I talk about here is really all forms of popular culture.
Yeah, it's not just radio. It's everything.
It's radio,
from the time.
TV, movies, showbiz personalities. And in a couple of words, it's records and recollections.
I love that.
From the good old days.
I love that. And you know, anytime somebody talks about that as a host on this radio station, I know the phones go crazy, the texting goes crazy, the emails go wild, because people love reminiscing. They love talking about the good old days. They love being young again.
They love, I have found over the years doing my radio shows, that people love a shared experience.
Yeah.
They thought that, I couldn't tell you, Dave, how many times people have said to me, you know, I thought I was the only one who ever remembered that.
Yeah.
And they said, but you said it, and you were talking about your high school or your grammar school. Yeah. And they said, I didn't go to that school, but where I went to grammar school or high school, we did the same thing. You know,
exactly.
We had stood outside and slammed erasers together to clean the chalk off of them.
But how many times have you and your lovely wife been out to dinner and you see a family at a table not sharing even that experience together? They're all on their iPhones and their iPads. There's not a lot of that happens these days anymore.
Everybody's texting.
Yeah.
Well, but it was a different time. And we look back at those times with fond memories. And, of course, nostalgia is the art of reminiscing about things that happened in the past and forgetting the bad things that happened.
That's true.
Or putting a pink sheen on those bad things.
Exactly.
They say, well, they weren't so bad, you know.
But thinking about the audiences that would listen to a Jack Benny or TV audiences that would watch Seinfeld, really, at the end of the 90s, those were communal experiences. Those were things that you talked about by the water cooler the next day. There are so many choices out there right now that you really got to harken back a little bit to look at when those times were that we all are familiar with a certain subject.
Indeed. Yeah. And you have to be able to creatively share the memory with someone. And nothing is too insignificant to describe. And you know, a little bit of that comes with just a wee bit of exaggeration, maybe.
Sure.
Or something through rose-colored glasses. And if you're telling a story, if you're a storyteller on the radio, for example, you know what makes a good story. And a little embellishment, fine. But everything anchored in the truth and the way it was. And if you're true to that, if you know, I've talked about downtown movie theaters in Chicago. And on every corner in the Loop was a big movie house, Balaban and Katz Theaters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people remember Balaban and Katz long after Balaban and Katz were gone. They were the two guys who put those movie theaters together. Plitt Theaters bought that later.
Plitt.
Who remembers Plitt?
I do. Nobody, I actually remember.
Remember
I do remember those signs sitting up there. And maybe they were abandoned at that time because I was born in 67. I didn't because I was – and let me tell you this, because I was born in 67. You're the guy that taught me about Riverview, listening to you have guests on the show, like, because that's the year it closed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I probably started listening to your show maybe in the late 70s with my grandfather. Mm-hmm. If we weren't listening to Cubs baseball, we'd be in his backyard and he'd turn on the radio and listen to Those Were the Days.
It's amazing how many people who never lived through the good old days of radio, as they're called, who found out about them through the broadcasts that we did.
Yeah.
And we'd get letters, postcards, and phone calls long before the emails or anything
like
that.
Right.
And they'd say, you know, I found out about you. One day I was polishing my car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I had the radio on,
so
and
true.
I didn't like what was on, and I turned it over, and I went, and all of a sudden I hear two guys talking about baseball. Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third. And they heard me playing an Abbott and Costello routine.
Yeah.
And they said, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
And then that's followed by Gangbusters, Jack Benny, and the Sergeant Preston of the Yukon.
Well, it was listening to you, and I think that got me interested in buying some albums. I think the company at that time was called Radiola, that used to put out those records that had all the – so I started listening to those. And I was amazed because as a kid I thought, wow, so there was a time without television? Like you know, when you're growing up, you don't remember that. My sister-in-law said to me once, you know, I don't know, 10 years ago, I said, you know, before there were VCRs, she goes, when was that? Like, if you missed watching a television program, you missed it. If there was a holiday special on and you didn't catch it, you missed it.
That's right.
There was no way to record all that. You know, and you started in 70, which, you know, here we are in a few years, you're going to be celebrating 50 years on the air, which is pretty wild. WLTD in Evanston, I think, where you met Dean Richards, right? Dean worked for you.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And you know, every time I bump into Dean, he never fails to blame me for that.
That's nice.
That's great. Blame. It's your fault. It's your fault. But then you were on WNIB for really decades, and then, of course, on WDCB, and you also hosted shows on WBBM. I mean, you've been on kind of all over the place. That's why it's so great to hear your voice
on
the legendary WGN. Absolutely.
I'm happy to be on the legendary WGN.
What was the very first radio show you started your collection with? Because, you know, tens of thousands of hours you've collected. What was the very first one that you remember that you got in your hands?
I think it was Grand Central Station.
Okay.
You ever hear of it?
You've talked to me about this before. Yeah, but explain it.
Grand Central Station was a program that was on Saturday mornings, and it was an anthology program of dramas. 1,000 dramas daily appearing in New York City. And trains would dive with a roar into the 2.5-mile tunnel beneath Park Avenue and all of this sort of thing. And it was the great sound effects on this show. And I remembered it from the radio days, long after the radio days were gone. And when I finally was able to come up with a source for some of these radio programs, and I had to pay, I think, $10 an hour to someone to put 2 half-hour shows on a reel-to-reel tape.
That's a lot of money back then.
Well, yeah, I know. And so I came up with $10, and I sent them $10, and I get 2 half-hour shows. And one was Grand Central Station, and I think the other one was the First Nighter program with Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule. And I found that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, this is terrific.
Well, Chuck's love of the good old days didn't just include presenting these old-time programs. It was also about interviewing some of the greats and sharing his memories. He's got a brand-new podcast out, and we're going to talk about that and more with Radio Hall of Famer Chuck Shaden. Next on 720 WGN. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Radio Hall of Famer and Chicago's very own Chuck Shaden. So, talking a little bit about old-time radio here and the genres, so many genres to choose from. And you know my kids. Now, my kids are 15, 11, and soon to be 4. The two older ones, we introduced old-time radio, listening to your shows, I think around Christmas time, maybe 5 years ago or so, or 7 years, or maybe 10 years ago, I should say. And, you know, I think they have some very clear favorites, and they enjoy them. They enjoy the Jack Bennies.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're timeless. There are some comedies, and I know you know this too, that aren't as timeless. They are really indicative of the period. So you kind of got to be in the mindset that you're going to listen to something from the 1940s. But the humor of a Jack Benny is absolutely timeless.
The Jack Benny shows didn't need, over the years, as I've played them on the air, they didn't need much of a setup. You say, here's the Jack Benny program, and you had a built-in audience. People knew what Jack, they knew what to expect from Jack Benny.
Yeah.
But if I played a Life of Riley program, I'd have to give a little bit of a setup.
Yeah.
First of all, we always talked about the date of a broadcast, a mystery show, a comedy show, an adventure show. And we'd want you to listen to it in that context. This is the time. Listen to that and use your imagination. You can do what all the listeners back in the radio days did. You decorated the sets. You costumed the actors. You decided whether the female lead was as willowy a blonde as you expected her to be. And the hero was as handsome and as strong and as virile as you wanted him to be.
Yeah.
And you had to mention some of the things about this. And if you were listening to a comedy show, like, for a good example, Fred Allen, who was very topical, very funny, but very topical. And you had to explain certain things in advance. If he's talking about the little flower in New York, well, the little flower was the mayor of New York, Fiorello LaGuardia, and LaGuardia's name, Fiorello, was Little Flower.
Yeah.
And Fred Allen would make a joke about the little flower, and the audience would laugh, and if you'd never
didn't
heard of
that...
Didn't
catch that joke, right, exactly.
So maybe... And the worst thing you can do is explain...
Everything.
...a joke. You can't do all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, when I was a kid, I listened and on the floor in front of the radio to Jack Benny and Fred Allen. I didn't get Fred Allen as much as I did Jack Benny. I listened to Bob Hope, and I hit a lot of his stuff. What was he talking about? I didn't know. But both of those guys...
Bob Hope was very topical.
Had a terrific delivery.
Yeah.
And there was a rhythm to their stuff. And Bob would say bum ba bum ba bum, and the audience would laugh, and I'm at home laughing. I don't even know what he's talking about. He's talking about some hamburger joint outside of the boundaries of some military camp in the middle of World War II. But the audience would scream. Bob would have a great little, you knew it was happening.
Yeah.
And so the same thing with Fred Allen. You would know some of that. But most of the dramas and the mysteries didn't have to do much of a setup.
Sure.
The only thing is, sometime there was a show called, I can't remember the name of the story, but the title of the drama was called Death in Step-Ins. Now, what the heck is a step-in?
Yeah.
Well, a step-in used to be like a bathing suit or a bloomer, some underwear.
Okay.
And something like that. And you'd step, it was like a full suit that you'd wear under your clothing. You'd step in. And so I had to figure out, how do I explain this? But it was indicative of the story. The whole mystery was surrounding on that. You don't come across stuff like that too much.
Yeah.
And if you listen to The Lone Ranger and The Green Hornet, I mean, you got the story there. The Lone Ranger explained everything to either Tonto or the horse,
yeah,
the Silver. And the Green Hornet talked to his valet, his faithful Filipino valet, after he was a Japanese valet. But then after December 7th of 41,
it had to change.
He was Filipino.
Absolutely.
So we had all of those things, and it was...
But it's the stories that surround them that you told that really always makes those shows so much more enjoyable, because then you got its context a little bit in all of that. And My Favorite Husband with Lucille Ball, you know, because I'm connected to it because of I Love Lucy. Mm-hmm. I grew up more of a television generation. But if you listen to those shows, they're kind of early versions of what you saw in I Love Lucy.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
As well. Drama. Some of the biggest stars of the day. I mean, you got to think about the fact that... you know, the Cary Grants of the day. They kind of wanted to be on radio. They were kind of clamoring to be on these popular shows. It was a big deal.
Cary Grant, in particular,
yeah,
as you mentioned his name, he loved radio,
yeah,
and he took it seriously as a great acting job, and he was happy to do radio whenever he could do it. And so was Vincent Price. Vincent Price was another man who really loved radio. He said he told me he would rather do radio than another one of these horror movies.
See, now, funny, movie stars today, when they are asked to do television, unless now it's a Netflix or something like that, but when they're asked to do television, they look like they're looking down upon it. That's not the way people looked at radio back then, as far as the movie stars were concerned.
No. Well,
it was
the movie stars, they looked at radio, first of all, no lights, no camera,
yeah,
no action.
And some good exposure, too.
No memorization.
Yeah.
And although they would wear a suit or they dress up a little bit if they had a studio audience, but there they were. They loved it, and they no memorization of lines. You know, that was wonderful.
True. Horror and sci-fi, we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about it again this Halloween, but hands down, suspense, my favorite. My daughter, when she's trying to be funny, she'll say to me, "Jim, it's blood." She'll say to me, she remembers that since she was maybe 7 years old. And those are the moments, and I've told you this before, you know, we'll get together with family. We'll go downstate. We'll light a bonfire. There might be 30 people around the bonfire, ranging from age 7, 8 years old to 80 years old. And everyone's having a cocktail or a little dessert, and you're sitting outside in the dark, and you see the glistening of the light. And you're listening to these old-time radio shows, these horror shows from Suspense and Lights Out and The Whistler and some amazing, amazing programs. I mean, the thrill at the edge of your seat and the way your imagination would fly.
All done without special effects.
Yeah, right. It was all in your head.
That's right.
It was all in your brain.
And
it was
I could be listening to the same mysterious program and each see something different.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. In fact, when I posted podcasts of House in Cypress Canyon and what's the one on the road?
On a Country Road.
On a Country Road. Those are my favorites. Yeah, right. Those are my favorites. I've found an image that I visioned in my head on how that story went. And somebody once said to me, "I never saw the house look like that before," because it was something that they just came up with themselves. And then, of course, it was the Westerns.
Well, what was the first thing that fell out of Fibber McGee's closet when he opened it?
Oh, trivia.
There's no wrong answer.
There's no
wrong answer.
Yeah, right. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. So I would think it was a pan.
No, well, all right.
Because that's what I heard.
I thought it was a moose head. But it didn't make any difference. That's funny. Everybody saw it differently. And everybody knew where the closet was.
Yeah.
No, no, it's not there. It's over here.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Benny's writers were writing together, writing a script for the Benny Show. And they said, well, Jack is going to go mail. He's written the letter, and he's going to go to the mailbox on the corner. And on the way over to the corner, he sees Ronald Coleman in front of his house next door. And one of the other writers says, no, wait, wait, you can't. Why not? He says, because Ronald Coleman lives on the other side of Jack's house.
Wow.
Now, Coleman lived really across the street from Jack in real life.
Yeah.
But that was the image that even the writers had of the show.
Interesting.
They knew where to go, where everything was.
Interesting.
And if you think the writers knew about it, certainly the audience knew what was coming up on those things.
I think one of the things I discovered as a kid when I was listening to old-time radio is I remember listening to Mel Blanc and hearing him on the Jack Benny Show, and I thought, man, that guy sounds like Bugs Bunny to me, you know? But, I mean, you really never thought when you grew up in a different era that those people had a life before, like, you know, I knew Endora from Bewitched, the cranky, cantankerous mother-in-law of Darren Stevens, and she had an incredible career in radio.
Agnes Moorehead.
There were quiz shows, too, that were popular, kid shows, of course, and you listened all to this. It was just as important listening to it as what you listened to it on, and you always talk about the green eye of your Zenith radio.
Oh, yeah, flickering green eye. Yeah. It was a tuning aid, really. But it was mostly with the Zenith radios. Others appropriated somewhat. You know, everything we've been talking about here is on my website because I have something like
giving people a taste.
200 interviews
that
we did.
Yeah.
And with each interview, almost every interview, there is a radio example
of their work. That's great.
So you go to listen to an interview with Vincent Price, and you hear Vincent Price as the star of a radio show. And we have that. Oh, up and down the line through all of that.
What was your first interview? Who was your first interview?
The first interview took place just north on Michigan Avenue here at Sage's Restaurant downtown. They had a party. It was a PR event for Sage's, and they had a party to host all of the Chicago radio talent over the years. It was a nostalgia party. And all the radio stuff, all the radio people came to the party. It was a cocktail party. It was a freebie. So everybody went.
Naturally.
And Bob Hergeth in the Daily News had a little item about it in there. And he says, all the radio people from Chicago are going to participate in this. Now, I started on May the 2nd of 1970. Okay. And this was going to be early June when this party was going to be. So I got a hold of Bob Hergeth at the Daily News and said, who's running that party? And he gave me the PR person from Sage's, and I called them up and said, I just started a radio show out of Evanston, and I'd like to come down and do some interviews during this party. Would it be okay to do that? And that person said, ooh, would it be? And so I took my microphone down there and talked to a whole bunch of different people, including Shirley Bell, who was Little Orphan Annie, to Paul Barnes, who was Captain Midnight, and to Phil Bowman, who directed Ma Perkins, and a bunch of others. And I was off and running. These were little 3-, 4-, 5-minute interviews in a crowd noises and everything else.
Yeah.
But I was off and running, and it was more than just playing the radio shows. I wanted to know what was behind the radio show, so I started doing all that digging and getting the interviews, and eventually I'd spend a week in California, and I'd try in advance to set up some interviews with people, or I'd talk to Howard Duff, who was Sam Spade.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to him in his home on Malibu Beach.
Wow.
And we were talking. We had a nice conversation. And he said, well, who else are you going to talk to around here? And I said, well, I got a couple of other people. I said, you know who I'm looking for? I'm looking for the fellow that you worked for Armed Forces Radio with, Elliot Lewis.
Oh, wow.
He says, I know where Elliot is. Elliot's over here, and he happened to be at Paramount Pictures, and he's working over there on something. So he gave me a phone number for Elliot Lewis.
Wow.
I called Elliot Lewis up, And I says, I just got through interviewing Howard Duff. And he's, oh, Howie, how's he doing? You know? And he said, you want to come over? I said, yeah. And then I said, well, okay, when can I do? He said, well, I'm at Paramount. He said, drive up to Paramount. You know where the gate is? Do yeah. I know where the gate is?
What does it look like?
Yeah, I know. And I pulled up, and a guard was at the gate with a clipboard. And I says, my name is Chuck Shaden. I want to interview. I'm here to see Elliot Lewis. He looks on the thing. Oh, yes, Mr. Shaden. Just a moment. He reaches in. He got a piece of paper with a scotch tape on it, stuck it on the windshield. Go right over there. Turn right, and you can park in front of the Cecil B. DeMille building.
Oh, man. Wow. See, look at that. You were on your way, man.
So I got in there, and I had my wife with me this time, by the way. And I went.
Smart.
We went up the stairs to this office building. And there was Elliot Lewis, who gave me one of the greatest interviews.
Wow.
Because he was on the Jack Benny program.
Yeah.
He was on with Phil Harris and Alice Faye. He did all kinds of stuff. He wrote and produced and directed Suspense. I mean, this guy was...
Well, he moved to television, too, eventually. I remember seeing his name
everywhere. He did all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And it was really... people say, what are your best interviews? I said, well, my best interviews are not my best interviews. It's the best interview subjects. Because in some cases, you could say, I'm here to introduce so-and-so, and then you sit back, and they tell you everything you wanted to know. And I learned real early in the game to interview people and listen to them and not look at my cards so much, my notes, because if you look at your notes, you're not
too
listening
much.
To the interviews.
That's true. That's true.
But then...
That's something you've taught me, and that's something Dean has taught me over time I've been doing this. Absolutely.
That's right.
You can have a guide, but you gotta have a conversation. It's not an interview. It's a
quick
conversation.
Bounce back. I was at Sages in June of 1970. In September of 1970, same year, I was at the Mill Run Theater, long gone now,
Niles.
Mm-hmm. Interviewing Jack Benny.
Yeah, that was, I think, the first interview I bought of yours. It was that Jack Benny collection to hear that interview. Because what year was that? Do you remember what year
1970.
That was? Yeah, so it was a handful of years before he passed away. So, that was one of the last longer interviews. And how exciting. I mean, that's the topping on the cake already. It's Jack Benny in 1970.
Yeah.
How was he? How was he as a...
He was terrific. Yeah. He was very relaxed and I was asking him questions that really amounted to radio questions. I mean, certainly he knew his television career.
Yeah.
And he probably hadn't had too many radio questions. When you're active on television, that's the questions
for
you
20 get. Some years already.
Right,
at that point,
And so he was very comfortable, very relaxed, and he answered all my questions as though he were answering them for the first time, and he probably wasn't. But he was very cordial, and I had the wits about me to bring a photographer with.
Yeah.
And I got a few nice photos of me interviewing Jack Benny, which is, where can you go from there? But then two weeks later, I was at the Ambassador East Hotel interviewing Tony Randall, who was in town to promote his new TV series, The Odd Couple.
The new series,
The Odd Couple. And I knew that he had a radio background. And he had a good background in radio. And when I asked him about the radio, and he remembered everything, told me all about it.
That's cool. And again, he's probably not asked on a regular basis, right?
But he also says, I didn't like radio. I hated radio. And like an idiot, I didn't say why.
Yeah,
but
gotcha.
After the interview was over and I listened to it, I could find out why. I could tell what he said about radio. He said, well, these things were pulp radio, and it wasn't that. The only one who did a good job in writing the scripts were Carlton E. Morris, who wrote One Man's Family and I Love a Mystery. And so he had a disdain for the writers.
The writers, yeah. So you figured that out through the conversation.
And yet over the years, the writers gave me some of the best interviews I ever had because the writer was always a frustrated actor. He was doing stuff.
Is that how they went?
I mean, I talked to a couple of writers for Jack Benny over the years, and they were great with the stories and all of that sort of thing.
Interesting. Now, I also know you got to know Jim Jordan over time because you're a big fan of Fibber McGee and Molly, and you got to connect to him as well.
It's a wonderful life.
It has been a wonderful life. It has. Well, and it continues on. And by the way, I have to say, I think it was tradition after a Cubs game to stop by Metro Golden Memories. I love that story.
I love that story.
Right. It was one of my favorites. But you got this new podcast. And again, we talk about a little bit of those good old days, but It's about yesteryear, you know, Cost of Bread, First Cars, Riverview, listening to the radio, music, movies, television. It's really a walk back in time.
It is. And in the first podcast of Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane, it tells you what Jimmy Cagney and George M. Cohan had in common. Now you say, well, that's easy. Jimmy Cagney played George M. Cohan in Yankee Doodle Dandy. But very few people happen to know that Jimmy Cagney and George M. Cohan were both born in a July, a number of years apart, but they were both born in July. And I get to play on this first podcast a recording that George M. Cohan made in 1911.
Wow.
And it's probably the oldest recording in my collection. And if you listen to that, you can hear where Jimmy Cagney got his Cohan style for the movie. And then we play a little bit of Cagney from Yankee Doodle Dandy. Johnny Jones.
Yep.
And one of the things about the podcast that I have is on my website, where you have immediate access to the podcast.
Yep, speakingofradio.com.
Or iTunes. You can go to iTunes. But on the web page of the podcast, after it tells you a little bit about what's in the podcast, there are suggested links that you could go to that illustrate some of the things that I've said and talked about in the podcast.
That's awesome.
So it'll give you a link to YouTube that shows the final scenes of Yankee Doodle Dandy, where he's finished talking to President Roosevelt, and he tap dances his way down the stairs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he's out on the street, and the boys are marching now, getting ready to go away to World War II.
So this is an experience. This isn't just the podcast. This experience continues through other stories and other links.
And the fun I have of it.
Yeah.
It's putting it all together.
Well, and the memories that you have and that you share with us, you really bring us to that time and you really make us feel like we're with you.
At this stage of the game, I'm glad I was there. I'm just glad I'm here, too, as
that's
a matter
awesome.
Of fact.
That's awesome.
But that's true. Steve Darnall, who's taken over the Those Were the Days program after I retired in 09.
Who guests on our show once in a while.
Yeah. I know he does. Yeah. And he does a great job. I couldn't have handpicked someone else.
That's wonderful.
But I handpicked Steve. But glad that's all right. He does a great job, but he wasn't there.
That's right.
He said he grew up at the University of Shaden listening in to all
that's
of this
true.
Stuff.
We all did. Yeah, we all did. No, that's true. We all did. Yeah, I learned a lot as well. Well, I'll tell you what, you can catch the best of Chuck's Those Were the Days radio shows, vintage interviews, the stars of yesteryear, over 200 online, his new podcast, Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane, and so much more. At speakingofradio.com. You're on Facebook now, too, aren't you?
Yeah, if I figure that out.
That's all right. I love that you're doing that.
If I can figure that out, I'm not. I have been a reluctant Facebooker. I mean,
if you're podcasting, you're in.
Everybody tells me I have to do that.
You have to. It's just part of your brand, my friend. You're a brand.
My brand, yeah.
You are. Always a pleasure and an honor having you here, sir.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it.
We'll talk soon.
Being here. Thank you.
All right. All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.